You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, we've come to the right place. That's what we do here. We take your calls and we answer your questions about all of those topics and many more. In fact, anything trucking, anything that the trucking lifestyle. So whether it might be home time, relationships, health, your business, your money, whatever it is, we'll tackle it here on the air. Many times, if I can't answer the question, somebody else will help us out. We're going to get to those calls and questions in just a couple minutes. I do want to remind you, though, that we are into April, and I've been saying since last October it was tax season. If you run a business, tax season starts at the end of the year, not in April when you have to scramble to get everything done. So, you know, I've done a couple shows on taxes. You can find some up on our podcast network if you need some specific ideas about how to get this done. But the most important thing right now is don't put it off for one more hour. I'm not even going to say one more day. Don't put it off for one more hour. All of the tax preparers are busy, really busy this time of year. You are probably going to get an extension at this point. Very, very few tax preparers would be able to get you in and get you finished. And if they could, I might worry a little bit about them. Places like the big box stores, H&R Block, Jackson Hewitt, Liberty, they could do it. But if you run a business, I wouldn't recommend that you go there. You should have a relationship with your tax preparer by now, but get started on your accounting. That's the number one thing. Get your numbers in order. And I'm going to give you a phone number. You can call us. We can help you with your taxes this year, and we can help you with your bookkeeping for this year as well. That's really where you need to get started. If you're stressing right now about taxes, it's because you weren't prepared. And you weren't prepared because you're not doing your bookkeeping or your accounting every month. And you need to start doing that. You need to start doing it right now. Don't wait until you get your tax return done this year. I can hear you saying already, well, I don't even have my tax return done for last year, so I'll wait. Don't do that. Get started on your bookkeeping right now. Get started on your taxes right now. And if you don't know where to start, I'm going to give you a number. Write this down. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. All right, I'm going to get to some phone calls. Let's go to Michigan. Ed, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I just had a couple questions for you. Back in November, I became an owner-operator. I came off the road. Before that, I drove for 21 years, but I decided it was going to be a good idea to purchase a Sprinter van and become an expediter.
Okay.
And in doing that, I purchased a used Sprinter van. It came with a full service history. I did a Carfax on it. The guy had maintenance records, never had any problems with the van, major problems. Okay, and fast forward till now, when I purchased it, it had 100,000 miles on it. Now I have about 113,000 miles on it, and in the last 13,000 miles, the van has been in the shop more than 8 times. I've had almost the entire DEF and DPF system replaced. I've had other smaller, less expensive things fixed also. But the fact of the matter is I have spent over $11,000. Some of that money I had to borrow to fix the van so I can keep running. And I'm at the point now where the check engine light is back on again, and every time I do that, I have to go to the dealer to have it diagnosed, etc. and I don't know what I should do. I mean, I'm at the point now where I gotta cut this thing loose or start making a lot of money, and I don't know what my answer is, you know?
Okay. All right. So we've got a couple issues here, and without just beating up on you, I want to make some things clear. In business, I'm just going to talk in general right now, any business, the easier it is to get into that business, the tougher it becomes to really make any substantial money, because there's tons and tons of competition. Now, I'm okay with that. I like the free market. I love competition. But I also like to be in a category where I can make myself very unique. And some businesses are just hard to do that because there's just so many people. You know, driving a tractor trailer, I've said many times, it isn't that difficult. I mean, we can teach most people to drive. If they can drive a car pretty well, we can usually teach them to drive a tractor trailer. But many people don't. They're afraid of it. It is more difficult than they want to go through. But when we start talking about hotshot sprinter vans, straight trucks, there are a lot fewer people who would be afraid of that. And what you see, especially if the economy goes a little south, you see people coming out of construction and all kinds of jobs that will jump into something like that. And it just creates a lot of competition, drives prices down. That's just in general. And I know that doesn't address the issue you're in right now, but you just may want to consider that long term. Now, I know some expediters who do great, but most of them tend to be in bigger, more specialized pieces of equipment with lift gates and reefers and, you know, lift axles and all kinds of things that make them very flexible. And again, more specialized. Now, we get to the big issue, which... How long have you listened to the show?
Oh, a good couple of years. And also, too, if I could just mention one thing, you know, I came off the road because I became disabled. You know, I would still be driving a truck, but I just can't do it anymore.
Got it. And I understand that. Okay. So you've heard all of the calls about the emission-related trucks, and I don't have a lot of experience with anything smaller than Class 7 and Class 8. I get questions once in a while. I read here and there. You know, the technology is basically the same. They're just smaller. You know, it seems like we had less trouble with the pickup trucks and some of those things. But I think the reason is we just don't, the average person just doesn't put many miles on them. And I think that's why the problems don't show up as often. But you've got a great example, or a horrible example, I should say, of the exact same thing we see in the Class 8 trucks. The emission systems start to fail, and when they do, nobody seems to know how to fix them. And I keep saying that, but yet shops don't seem to be getting any better at this. We still see this: throw parts at it, send it out the door. The problem comes back, throw more parts at it, send it. And in the meantime, you're throwing money at it. They're throwing parts at it. You're losing work. So I wish I had a better answer for you about how to solve the problem. But honestly, the best answer I can give anybody when they have a truck like this, all I can say is what I would do. I would get the hell out of that thing so fast it would make your head spin. And I would be finding a pre-emission vehicle.
Right. I just didn't know, you know, through all of your business dealings and whatnot, if you've heard of any class action lawsuits against Mercedes or anything that would maybe long term.
There have been some big fleets who have back against the dealers and the OEMs and nothing. I mean, if there were class action lawsuits, they'd be against everybody. They'd be against every truck manufacturer, every engine manufacturer, because this isn't Mercedes or, you know, it's not one company. Everybody is having the same problems with the emissions. And I'm surprised there aren't more class action lawsuits. I don't really know of any. And even if there were, let's take a look at class action lawsuits in general. Very, very seldom do they ever settle under 10 years. The more complicated the suit, the longer they go. And this is going to be, if they ever happen, this will be a very, very long, complicated suit. So I tell people, don't ever think that some sort of lawsuit is going to solve your immediate problem. It's class action or, you know, you suing one company as an individual, which would cost you a fortune. Most attorneys would never take it. And again, it wouldn't solve anything for years and years to come. There are no real lemon laws that are going to. It was a used vehicle. It's a commercial vehicle, so we don't have much outlet there. These are all the things I've explored over the years, and that's why my only answer is get the hell out of those trucks and get something pre-emission so that this doesn't happen. I really wish I had a better answer for you, but it's no different than what we deal with the pre-emission Class 8 or the emission Class 8 trucks. And I've been frustrated over those for years. I don't have any good answers for people. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Or go to the website, letstruck.com. I want to remind you, the podcast shows are up and running, and we're doing them every week. Listenership is growing. I have to say thank you to all the people who are supporting the podcast. And that's really all I ask. Check them out. Listen to them. If you like them, keep listening. Tell somebody else about them. Give us a review on iTunes. I'm not asking you to spend any money. We'll support the show financially, but I need your help to support it as listeners. So go to the website, letstruck.com. Check out the different shows and listen and see what you think. Let's go to Tennessee. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how's it going?
Going good. What can I help you with today?
Well, I have two separate questions. The first one is, I know you had a FedEx business where you ran doubles and triples. Now, I pull a reefer van in my current company, so I don't really know how to do doubles and triples. And the only information that I've had is through the guidance book that I used to pass the test for doubles and triples, but that's really the only information I have on how to do that. So basically, what I'm kind of asking you is, what's the best information to know before sitting down in front of a potential employer for this kind of type of trucking as far as getting ready for that interview, as far as double triples are concerned?
Good question. Let me give you my experience. 22 years old, bought my first truck, put it to work doing local P&D work. So I was hardly ever left, you know, a 200-mile radius, did 20, 25 stops a day, home every night, didn't work weekends. And right before Christmas, like the week before Christmas, and I'd only been driving a couple months, we were busy and everybody wanted off for the holidays, and I was real hungry for work. And during the day, they called me and said, hey, we've got to run down to Cincinnati tonight. And I was up in Akron. Do you want to take it? And they didn't care about hours or anything. I mean, I had been working P&D all day. They said, go home, sleep a couple hours, come in. You know, you need to be leaving here by midnight one or so, which gave me enough time to sleep. So I didn't even think to ask any other questions. I was so excited I was going to get more work, and I was going over the road. So I went home, slept, came back, and I get the paperwork out of the mailbox in the yard, and there's two trailers. So I'm trying to figure out which one I'm supposed to take.
Yeah.
And then it dawned on me, you're supposed to take both of them. I had no clue how to hook up a set of doubles. Never paid attention to it. Never asked anybody. And it's December in Northeast Ohio. It's cold. It's dark. And boy, you talk about struggling. I'll bet, not exaggerating, I'll bet it took me 2 hours plus to get hooked up. And I had dollies rolling around. I had trailers moving when they shouldn't have been moving. It was kind of a fiasco. And I got to the point where, you know, I could drop and hook a complete set in under 10 minutes. You know, pull in, drop yeah. two, rehook two, and be back out in 10 minutes. It's not hard, but you're good to ask. I wish I would have known and didn't have to learn it under those conditions. Here's what I would recommend. Really, do you know anybody at all that pulls doubles?
You know, I find people that do that type of business, and I ask them, and I take a look at how everything's hooked up on their trailer, but I don't know anybody personally.
Yeah, even if you don't, here's what I would do. And I've done this before for a lot of different things. You know, find somebody in a truck stop somewhere and offer to buy them dinner and say, hey, look, I'll buy you dinner. Run me through this once or twice, drop and hook. It's really, you know, the thing is, make sure your rear trailer is someplace easily accessible. And if not, in the beginning, sometimes it makes sense to spot your rear trailer. Now you'll get to the point where you can get to it in some pretty crazy places. But in the beginning, it only takes a couple minutes to spot it in a nice, easy place. You know, hook your dolly to your lead trailer if you need to move it a long distance. If not, you can usually push them pretty easily. Pull the dolly up, push the dolly back to where it's touching the rear trailer and just have it sit there. I don't connect any lines at that point. Back your front trailer up to the dolly, hook everything up, back under just like you would under a trailer. And you just have to know, you know, which valves should be turned which way and that kind of stuff. But it's really not much more difficult than that. And again, I would just grab somebody anywhere pulling doubles and say, hey, let me buy you dinner. Show me once or twice.
So you ask him like to disconnect everything and reconnect everything and kind of show me how it's done.
Yeah. And like I said, had I been out in a truck stop somewhere and you approached me with that, I'd say, I already ate dinner. Don't worry about it. Let me show you this because it's only going to take me 20 minutes to a half hour to give you the whole course.
Okay, that sounds good. I have another question now, and it has to do with paying off my credit card bills. I know I talked to you about this before. I have a $5,000 debt, and I'm going to the Dave Ramsey's Money Makeover, and the first step, of course, is to get $1,000 for, you know, for a rainy day, right?
Emergency.
And what I was thinking about doing was putting that into a credit union money market fund, but, have the $1,000 in there, but also use that same account to save up the money to pay off this credit card. Because at $2,500, I start getting dividends in that same account, basically halfway through my goal of paying this off.
Right.
Now, to have that as a security fund and also a saving fund to pay off the credit card bill, do you think that's a good idea or no? Should I separate those completely?
I do think it's a good idea. And there are, I certainly love a lot of what Dave Ramsey does. I tend to differ on just a few things. And one of them is, I don't want to complicate my life any more than I need to. I don't need six accounts, even if I have six goals. You know, and if I have six different things I want to do with the money, it doesn't mean I have to put each one in a separate account. It just means I have to have the discipline to know what money is going to be used for what and not alter that So I love the idea of a money market at a credit union. You're not going to make much, but you can't make much anywhere today. And that's just the nature of the.
So is it even is it a bad or a good idea to even have it with a credit union or go to a separate bank? Do I have better dividends at another bank versus a credit union?
Well, here's the thing. If we're talking about interest or dividends or any kind of earnings on this emergency fund, none of it matters. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I got that from the book,
You might as well just bury it in the backyard because we are talking such tiny, tiny amounts of money that I wouldn't even think about it. So, you have a credit union, use that money market account, and use it for as many goals as you need and with one account, because we don't want to overcomplicate this. And just have your own little, tracking system so you know what money is for what. I actually think that's better because it in some ways it forces you to track the numbers and look at them more often and make some decisions. And, and then you've got one account. You're not screwing around with a bunch of different accounts and different passwords and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. So congratulations on working that through and working the plan. I love seeing people do that because that's all it takes. Just get started. Once you get started, things will start falling in place. You'll have questions, get the questions answered, and keep moving. Speaking of moving, let's move on to another call. Let's go out to Arizona. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call, Kevin.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I'm hoping that maybe you can confirm something that I'm thinking. I'm getting a little bit of a vibration in the truck. And I try to, boil it down to where it's coming from. So the first thing I did is I was rolling down a hill. I threw it into neutral, see if I still got the vibration. Still got it. So I'm eliminating it coming from the transmission.
Well,
and I tried to see.
Hold on just a little bit. If we put it in neutral, we actually eliminate the engine, but not necessarily the transmission. Now, We've eliminated the transmission about 90% of the way, but we've still got the main shaft spinning. The odds of that causing your vibration are pretty slim. So you're on the right track. We have and this is good trouble. This is what I try to get people to do before they ever go to a shop. So you're on the right track. I've got to get to a break. I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to come right back to you though, and we'll continue this step by step. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're just going to jump right back to the phone calls. I was talking with John in Arizona. So, John, what else have you figured out while you're driving this thing down the road that might help us?
Okay. I'm getting the vibration between about 57 and 61. I'm not getting any increased vibration while braking. I do not get any increased vibration while under a heavy load.
Okay.
And it seems to disappear at slower speeds and at higher speeds.
Got it. So there are a couple reasons, but the most common, and we might be able to verify this with a really close inspection of the front tires, but maybe not yet if it just started. One of the more common reasons to get that vibration that starts somewhere in the 50s mile-an-hour range, sometimes a little less, and then you can drive out of it. Now, that's very, very seldom a balance or an out-of-round issue. Because if we have a balance issue or out-of-round, the faster we go, the worse it gets. The reason we can drive out of this, if it's what I'm thinking, is because it's an alignment issue, but only on the steer axle. And it's usually a little bit of play in the front end. You know, we get wear on all the components over time, and we might be able to look at each component and measure its wear and say, nope, this one's still good. This one's still good. This one's still good. But if they're all worn just a little bit and you add that all up, that allows just enough movement that if the steer tires are pointed straight down the road when you're sitting still, there's just enough movement to allow them to come toe out with the force of going down the road. And what happens is, as you're rolling up to speed, when it's slow enough, you can't really feel that it's happening. When you get up above 40 into 50, now the tires are trying to force their way out, and the road speed is fighting against that. And then you get going fast enough that they stay out. Now, here's another way to tell, and we may be early, because it seems to me like, you know, you picked up on this pretty quick and you're trying to figure it out early, which is good because we'll probably save your steer tires. The other way to figure out if your truck is starting to go toe out is that it will start to wander on the road. It won't necessarily pull in either direction, but it will start to follow grooves. So if you feel like, yeah, I'm kind of fighting this thing just to keep it in the lane sometimes, that may be another indication, but it may be a little early for that. But it sounds to me you might have an alignment issue and it might be a little toe out.
But I'm not getting the vibration in the steering wheel.
Okay.
I'm getting the vibration in the truck. I'm thinking that it's a U-joint issue. Because the vibration's in the truck at the steering wheel.
Okay. It could be. Again, it's a little unusual to be able to drive out of an issue like that. It is possible, though. And that's the thing about vibrations. I would say they're second to electrical problems as far as difficulty in troubleshooting. There's so many places it could be, so many things that could cause it that we just have to keep narrowing it down. The good news about most alignment problems is it doesn't cost us a lot to eliminate possibilities. You know, if you get under the truck yourself, you don't even need to go to a shop. If you get under the truck yourself, we can tell if there's any excessive wear in the driveline. You know, start at the transmission yoke, grab it with both hands, see if you've got any excessive wiggle in the yoke. You know, turn the drive shafts back and forth to see if you can find any excessive wear in any of the U-joints or any of the yokes. And that should give you a pretty good idea. The other possibility that you more than likely will need a shop to check are the driveline angles. If we get a leveling valve that starts to wear out a little bit and allows that driveline angle to change, you will get a vibration with this as well.
Okay. And how much play should I be seeing in those yokes?
A little. I wish I could quantify that better. The problem is when you go to check them, there's some natural turn before you even get to the point where you start to feel the play. So you got to go through that. And then the other thing we want to do is we want to move up and down. That if you find much movement up and down, then I would get a shop to look at it.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll try and swing by Chad's and have him take a look at the alignment. He's done the truck a couple of times, so he knows the truck well.
Well, you know, and Chad will look at the driveline for you. You know, he's not I wouldn't call him a driveline specialist, but he deals with enough vibration issues that he's looked at some of the other areas, and he might be able to help you out with that as well.
Beautiful. Thank you. I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Nebraska. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
So I guess we're looking at an oil sample here, huh?
Yep. Like a couple weeks back, I found the bad cam, and I ran it about 8,000 and took another sample.
Well, this is good news. If we go back back in history here, you know, we had fuel dilution at 4.439, and then...
Yeah, actually, 3.9 was the very first sample. They're switched around, but... Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I saw the dates there. Okay, 3.9, then we went to 4.4, then we went to 5.7. That's when we knew we had a problem. You think you found it. Now we're down to 2.5. 2.5 is virtually zero. You know, so I think that there's a very good chance you've got this taken care of. Now, you are still running the 30-weight synthetic, right?
Yeah, the Lucas.
Okay, so your viscosity is good. So
yeah,
we're good there.
Normal around 10.5 for...
Yeah. Yeah, for a 30-weight synthetic, between 10 and 11 is a really good number. If we were to drop into the 9s, then I would think there might be a little more fuel dilution. So your number on viscosity is right where we want it to be, and you have virtually no wear metals whatsoever. So every indication is that there's no fuel dilution in this engine now.
Okay, and what's a good base number average?
For what?
On the base number?
Oh, base. It really depends on the oil, because okay. Every oil starts with a different amount of base. Now, if you go find what's called the data sheet for your oil, and you can probably go to, I see you're using Lucas. If you go to their website, you can probably find the data sheet. Now, just to, if I had to pick a number, I would say a lot of oils start with a base of 10 to 12 would probably be a fairly good guess to say as an average. And then what we're looking for is whatever your oil started at, we don't get too worried until it gets to 25% of that number. Let's use a nice, easy number. If you had an oil that only started at 10, we could go all the way down to 2.5 on base before we would start to look for ways to increase it. You're at 8.25. I very seldom see oil with any miles on it stay up that high. That tells us that the engine is performing well. We can see your soot is low. So we're not creating acidic environment that would. So that's a good sign. One, that you've got a good quality oil. Two, that the engine is running well.
All right, perfect. Well, I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Now, the other thing that really helps base hold up is the fact that you've got an OPS, not just any bypass filter. Any bypass filter would help some. The OPS, by taking out the liquid contaminants, which is very unusual. Most bypass filters can't do that. By taking out the liquid contaminants, we cut down on the formation of acid, which helps the base last a lot longer. Let's go to David in California. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yep, it's your turn.
Yeah, I have a question about audible books for tax deduction.
Yeah.
Wondering if you can deduct the monthly fee and also the books themselves.
Got it. Very good question. The music just queued up there, so that means I'll get to a break, and when I come back from that break, I'll answer that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, just a quick reminder, we're heading into segment four on the first hour. So at the end, I'll say I'm done. I've got to get out of here, but don't hang up. We're going to come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Before the break, I was talking with David in California. He was asking about the tax deductibility of Audible. So a couple things here. I say, yes, the monthly fee, whatever you pay, is tax deductible as a business expense. This is one of those areas where the IRS, in a full-blown audit, which happens very, very rarely, in a full-blown audit, they might possibly question it. And here would be the only thing they could question. You could possibly, because I do it, on Audible, I listen to both business, self-development, that kind of stuff, and entertainment kind of books, you know, just novels or whatever. And the novels, entertainment, it is not tax deductible. People believe it is because there's a line on the tax return for meals and entertainment. But what confuses people is that the only time entertainment is deductible is when you are entertaining somebody else, not yourself. You have to be entertaining somebody that could benefit your business. For example, salespeople. You know, it's very common for them to take somebody out to a show or a sporting event, and that's actually tax deductible, but not if you just go out to a sporting event or a show yourself. So if we buy a novel, that's entertainment and it's not tax deductible, but business books could be. I take the simple approach, and I have the same thing. I have a monthly subscription to Audible. I don't go back and try to figure out what, you know, I used my credits for. I just say, look, it's business. I'm going to deduct the whole cost. If I buy any extra books, I'm going to deduct those. Now, if I'm out of credits and I buy a novel, then I won't make that a business expense. But if I have credits, I don't try to go back and separate them to see what was what. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, that was going to be part of my second question is, if the monthly fee wasn't deductible, using that for the entertainment and using the credit or the outright buying the business books.
I use my credits however I feel like, and I do deduct the entire monthly subscription cost every month. I don't go back and, you know, and if the IRS in a full-blown audit, which again, if I look back when I was doing tax returns, in 1,000 tax returns, I can only remember one or two full-blown audits, and those were both triggered because both times the clients took a lot of money out of their retirement accounts and never even bothered to tell us or the IRS about it. And that was what triggered both of those audits. And they wanted to go through every line of the tax return because they felt like, you know, if the client was going to cheat on something that big, and the clients both said they just forgot, they didn't think about it. Other than that, most audits, we never even went to an office. I mean, sometimes the client would, I'd send them to the IRS office. Most times we handled things on the phone and through emails. They would question a number, we would show the proof, and that would be as far as it would go. So there were lots of times where this kind of stuff was on a tax return. It just never gets questioned.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. But I guess it's I should be responsible and tell you what the exact rule would be. The exact rule would be, even under the subscription, we actually should go back and figure out how much a credit costs, and we know that, and then deduct only the credits we used for business. That would be the absolute right way to do it. Let's go to Ohio. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Kevin. I have a quick two questions. The first quick question, do MD alignments, do they do alignments on trailers too?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay, because I'm going to do my truck and trailer at the same time with them, because I've had it done before somewhere else, and the problem came back.
Jump in there real quick. For anybody who understands how MD alignment system works, I think it's absolutely brilliant for truck and trailer. It's so clean and simple, and they do it right, you know, on the ground in a parking lot, and it comes out really well. So I think it's a great idea to do them together like that.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that when I get back home. And my second question, last April I replaced my trailer brake and also the slack adjusters, and I switched it to automatic slack adjusters, but my truck is not an automatic slack adjusters, and my trailer brakes right now, they have to be replaced because it worn down so bad. And it's like whenever I step on my brake, the trailer seems to be catching first, you know? And I don't know what's causing that.
You know, automatic slack adjusters were I guess, a nice invention, but they don't work all that well. They really don't. If you stay right on top of the maintenance, you know, keeping everything clean and greased so everything moves freely, they should work well, but they don't always. I mean, it seems to me like we should be able to design a better one, but nobody has that I'm aware of. It sounds to me like that you're not adjusting your tractor brakes up as tight as the automatic slack adjusters are keeping the trailer. That's what it sounds to me like. You know, if you don't mind getting under and adjusting brakes, then I would try to match tractor and trailer so you've got the same system. Because it sounds to me like tractor's getting adjusted manually one way and the automatic adjusters are doing their thing, but it sounds like they're keeping the trailer up much tighter. Now, you will see several things happen. You will see your trailer brakes wear out faster. And, you know, in bad weather, you know, you really don't want your brakes activating at different times or at different intensities. That's what, you know, makes it much easier to lose control. So,
yeah, do you have, right. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sure you noticed it a couple times. Do you have a good shop that you trust and work with?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
I would get with them and say, hey, take a look at all of my brakes and let's figure out, since you're going to have to replace some trailer parts anyway, let's take a look at the whole package, maybe even get your mechanic to come out and drive it with you or ride with you so he can feel it and say, what can we do? What's the best way to get this set up so, you know, my brakes stay as close as possible?
Got it. I'll definitely do that. Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. All right. So, you know, and I'm going to hammer on this a little bit again. And I know I say this all the time, but I'm glad that he has a shop that he works with. If you go in and ask those kind of questions to the average shop, you just may get looked at like you have three heads, and they'll give you half an answer. But if you have a shop that you work with and you've built relationships with, those are the kind of things that I like to partner with the shop on. Get their advice on this stuff. You know, good people that you build relationships with, they like to give advice, or they should. And then that's a good partner. And ask them, What would make more sense? Here's my problem. What would make more sense? What's the best solution? Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome to the program.
Howdy.
What's up today?
Stu Broad Rap making money.
There you go.
I have a 2014 Peterbilt. It's not a glider. That's the one mistake I made. So my advice for anybody that's going to buy a new truck, buy a glider or buy a pre-emission. So
you know me, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, we are, while we can still build gliders, and I don't see any end in sight. In fact, I've talked to some of the people higher up in PACCAR and Freightliner that are active in their glider programs. And they're thinking that we could have 10 more years of gliders.
Oh, good.
And maybe more, who knows? And I'm thinking that hopefully in 10 years we get the new truck issues worked out. We'll get there someday. So we are going to start expanding our glider program and our different glider options as well. And I'm going to be talking about that more in the future. Hey, Paul, I wasn't paying attention. Probably should have just wrapped this up myself. But what I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to carry you over and open up the next show with your question. Thanks for joining me. I am all out of time. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're just going to get started on another hour. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about everything trucking, and we'll even go beyond. It is called Trucking Business and Beyond. We'll talk about whatever you want. We'll wrap it around the trucking lifestyle. So if you have questions about health and fitness, living on the road, certainly business, money, fuel mileage, taxes, technology, all of those things, give me a call. I'll do my best to come up with an answer for you. And if I can't, many times somebody else listening will jump in and help us out. On the last show, I had started talking with Paul about gliders right at the end of the show. And I wanted to bring him back on because I have a couple things I want to say about this topic. We've been building gliders since, we started to research them and get back into them the same year that we started on the air, late 2007. 2008, we started talking with Fitzgerald, and 2009, we built our first signature glider. And we've had tons and tons of experience with gliders over the years since then. And it's been a great experience, really great. Lots and lots and lots of happy customers, happy owner operators with gliders. People have built small fleets all around gliders, and they're doing really well. Now, several months ago, we had a couple issues with gliders that we were struggling to get fuel mileage on. But we need to put that in perspective. We have literally built thousands of gliders over the years. When I say we, I just mean we've been involved. I haven't built them myself. We've been very involved. We have a lot of listeners who, you know, report back to us. We have a lot of gliders in profit gauges where I can see the numbers, and fuel gauges where I have fuel mileage. And out of those thousands and thousands, we've had a couple problems recently with fuel economy. Now, put that into perspective of the new trucks. We're roughly 60 out of 100. Not a couple out of thousands and thousands, 60 out of 100 new trucks show fuel mileage problems, emission-related problems, maintenance issues, downtime, all kinds of things. So we do have to put that into perspective. People started to panic about gliders when we were just reporting some things. Now, because we saw something, we got right on it, though. What changed? Why couldn't we figure out the fuel mileage on these couple of gliders? Less than five, maybe right around five right now total. And I had a lot of people working on it, a lot of people helping me with it. And it turns out that there were some possible issues of mismatched parts. Now, I recently got to spend some time with the president of Harrison Truck Centers. Harrison builds roughly 1,000 gliders a year. This year, they are working on plans to double that to 2,000 gliders. We are going to talk about some special edition gliders that I want to build. And but we got to dig deep into some of the issues, and this was not specific to Harrison. It turns out we were, now I'm 99% sure we were correct, and Detroit also realized the problem was with their engine, and these were all factory remanned engines, and Detroit literally took the couple of engines back. Now, that doesn't mean we've solved this for everybody. There's still some out there that we're working on, but cases where Detroit said it's got to be the engine. We don't know what. We'll tear them apart and find out, but we're taking the engine back. Give the customer a new engine. And they did that. So I was very encouraged to see that Detroit stepped up. We believed that the problem was somewhere in the remanned engine. They stepped up, replaced the engines, and we're going to continue to follow up with them and see if we can find out what happened. But I'm also very encouraged working with Harrison. Great, great company. But I was very, very impressed. I've been meaning to get to them and talk to them more to find out their experience with gliders. And I'm encouraged to see they want to build more, actually double production. And we are going to talk to them about some special projects. We will also continue to work with Fitzgerald. That this isn't a switch at all. We will work with both because we need more capacity. We need more resources. I want to do some special projects that Fitzgerald always have time to do. They have a lot of fleets they work with. They crank out a lot of trucks. Harrison showed interest in letting me design some specialty kind of versions and then working with us to build them and get the prices in line where we need them as well. So with that, I'm going to bring Paul back on. Paul, welcome back, and go ahead.
Thank you much. Yeah, my truck, the Peterbilt I got, it's got that ISX Cummins. It looks like a big shiny red apple, but when you bite into it, it tastes like a lemon. That's the best way to describe it. But I've actually had a lot less problems than a lot of people, so I guess I'm in the 41% range. I'm not sure. So.
Yeah, it could be, but you know, and I really do feel bad for anybody. We shouldn't have to deal with this. We just shouldn't. You spend that much money, your business depends on it, and it is such a lousy situation. And you know, I don't think I can lay blame with the OEMs. I mean, the OEMs put out great trucks for us for years and years. Truck manufacturers, engine manufacturers, drivetrain manufacturers. We had great trucks for years. It wasn't until the government started mandating things that all the problems happened.
You know, I like my truck. I just don't like the red engine. I made the mistake there, but I won't make it again. So, you know, have Fitzgerald built an Argosy glider? Do you know if they've built one?
I do know that. Actually, I don't know. So I'm not going to say that. I'd only be guessing. I would have to double check with them. Now, and there's another reason why I was interested in Harrison. I'm glad I got to talk to the head honcho over there. Great guy, by the way. They build lots of different gliders. Like when companies kind of find their niche. And for Fitzgerald, their niche is build a really solid glider, kind of middle of the road specs, something that would work for virtually anybody, works great for small fleets, works good for owner operators. And they don't necessarily stray too much out into, you know, one-off builds or specialty kind of builds. Harrison, on the other hand, three locations. They are a full-fledged Freightliner Detroit dealer, and they are building even the M2, the business class, class 7. They're building some of those gliders. They're building some dual-fuel gliders, which are diesel and natural gas, which I'm not all that interested in. I've done enough research to know. But it's good to see that they're doing that. They're exploring those things. So if anybody might build an Argosy glider, it might be them.
Okay. And then on last weekend's show, you had a guy call in, and he wanted to lease a second truck.
Yes.
And he, right at the end there, he said he wasn't out here for the money. Well, if he's not out here for the money, I think he's out here for the wrong reason, because I like my job, but I'm out here for the money, because I'm going to work while I can work and save money. And then when I want to slack off and go back to New Zealand for a month, or just go on vacation over here, or whether I want to retire or what, I'll have the money where I don't have to be dependent on someone else or the government, or I don't have to stay out here till I'm, you know,
exactly
as old as dirt. So that guy that says he's not out here for the money, he's wrong, period.
It's an interesting point, and I had already spent quite a bit of time with him. And when he made that statement, I kind of cut him loose and wrapped up the call. But it's a good topic. Here's the thing. He didn't want my advice. I could tell. I could tell pretty early on what he wanted was he just wanted me to agree with his plans. He just wanted me to say, oh, yeah, since you don't care about the money, just go ahead and do
it.
Yeah, so he was trying so hard to convince me to go along with him, which I absolutely was never going to do, because his plan, in my opinion, was horrible. He's leasing one truck, which I disagree with, and he was actually doing all the wrong things. He didn't know any of his numbers. He knew very little about the business, and I didn't want to just keep hammering on him, but I also didn't want to, you know, say, oh, sure, just go do this since you don't care about the money. Honestly, if you don't care about the money, then why take it? Why not just donate it all to charity? Because you do care about the money. We have to. I mean, unless we're independently wealthy, and he wasn't, you have to care about the money. So he was just trying very hard to get me to go along with this plan, and that was just never going to happen. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, we have all kinds of stuff going on, good stuff. It is tax time. If you need help with taxes, call us. If you don't have a bookkeeping system and tax time has been very stressful for you every year, then it's time to get a bookkeeping system right now. The good news is we have, hands down, the best owner-operator bookkeeping system on the planet. I've been working on it for literally 20-plus years, and I haven't been making it more complicated all that time. I've been making it easier. I've been making it simple. You can do all of your bookkeeping in less than 30 minutes a month under our system, and you will have great numbers. All those same numbers you hear me go over with people here on the show, That's because I have access to their numbers in our system. So give us a call either way, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. We're going to get back to some phone calls. I'm going to head off to New York. Roger, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I'll just give you a brief history. I've been off the road for about 10 years now, and I just started back on the road a month ago, exactly 30 days ago. I'm working for two guys that know nothing about trucking whatsoever.
Okay.
I'm trying to run the truck as if it's my own to try to help save them money. Within the first week of running this truck, I was running about 67, 69 miles an hour. And the fuel mileage was about 4 miles per gallon.
Ouch.
I knew that was an issue. Yeah, I knew that was an issue right away. So the second week that I started the run, because I'm home every night for the most part, and I'm home every weekend. So I had backed it down. I pulled one of your stunts, and I started running 60 miles an hour.
Okay.
I saw some improvement. I got up to about 4.5.
Ooh.
But then I backed it down to 55 miles an hour. And I've been running 55 miles an hour for the past 2 weeks.
Okay.
Now, I think there's something wrong, only because, number one, I'm in a day cab. Number two, half of the miles that I run are empty. I usually run out empty and come back loaded.
Okay.
And my fuel mileage for my 30-day average is 5.06.
That's horrible. At 55 miles an hour, that is just horrible. Now, let me ask you a question. Possibly a truck that used to be in one of the rental fleets like Penske?
No.
Okay.
I believe based on the letters that I was able to trace, it used to pull some sort of tanker because it does have a PTO system on it.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay. What year and what engine?
It's a 2007 International 9400i, and it's got the Cummins. It's a 500 horsepower Cummins.
Okay. So we are going to potentially run into one problem I'm not going to be able to help you with, but there are still 10 or 15 things I can help you with. The one issue we can always run up against that I'm really not much help with is an emissions-related problem. And I say it all the time. If it's emissions-related, and there's a good chance at least part of this is, there's not much I can do. But what we will do is address all of the other factors that could help this truck. And then, you know, the money your employers are going to save will be tremendous. Then they can decide what they want to do from there. What does this thing have on it for tires?
22.5 standard tires.
Do you know the brand?
Every tire is different. The driver's side front is a Bridgestone.
Okay. You don't even you don't even need to tell me anymore. When I know they're mismatched tires, that is the problem. There's a good chance that the average rolling resistance for this whole truck is somewhere in the 150 range. Now, if they're willing to spend some money and put tires on it, we could take that 150 down to 100 and you'll pick up a half mile per gallon. Now, that is significant because when you're only at 5 per gallon is $5,000 or $6,000 a year in savings. So that is where I would absolutely start. And here's the thing. You know, it's difficult for me to work with somebody when it's not their truck. I really appreciate the fact that you are trying to help them, that you're slowing down, that you're taking your time. But if they're not willing to get involved and if they're not willing to spend money, then you and I, you know, may be out pounding sand somewhere. It's not going to matter much. So this would kind of be the test. The single most important thing I could change on that truck and help them with would be tires. And if they're not willing to look at that and invest tires, then there's not much sense in looking at much else.
Okay.
Now, well, like I said, there's not more we could do.
On the plus side to that, they're basically going on what I say because they have no clue. You know what I mean? They don't even know what a Kenworth truck is.
Yeah, got it.
That's how clueless they are. So they're going on what I'm saying. So that's why I figured I'd call in and get some ideas from you. So that this way I can go back to them and say, look, this is what we really need to do.
I would start there. I would go, you know, for me, it's easy. I would just say go buy all Michelins. It's what I buy. They're low rolling resistance. They're super quality tires. The truck will be a pleasure to drive. You'll be surprised at the difference tires can make in the way it drives and handles. But fuel mileage should come up at least a half mile per gallon and could come up more. And that is, so if you can convince them to do that and then show them the savings, then they'll probably be very willing to do the next steps after that. And the next steps aren't going to cost much. But here's what I don't want to do. I don't want to throw some air tabs on this thing, throw a Fleet air filter in it and a Pittsburgh Power muffler, which would all be great ideas. But it might take us a little too long to show them the absolute gain. So I want to get a big bang up front. And, you know, you need tires anyway. Running around on a bunch of mismatched tires would drive me insane. So I think this is a good place to start. They'll see a big impact in fuel economy. Because here's the other thing. We know the Fleet air filter works. We've tested it thousands and thousands of times. We know the muffler works. We know the air tabs work. But the engine modifications don't always help if there's an engine problem. And I'm convinced there's an engine problem. We're going to have to deal with that after we show them that we can improve the fuel mileage and make them some money. Then I think they'll be more open to some things that might not always get a return. So we need to build a little bit of trust with them first that we do know what we're talking about. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Let's do that. See how open they are. Go ahead.
I did have another question for you.
Okay.
I pretty much had them convinced because I'm not, I did a trip to Kentucky in this day cab last week, and I did a trip to Ohio yesterday. So I told them that, you know, you really need to get me a sleeper because spending $400 to $500 a week on hotels is not very efficient.
Good point.
We've started checking out some sleeper trucks because I don't mind not being home every night. I like being home on the weekend. So yeah. If I had a sleeper, I could stay out longer. I could turn more miles. You know, because right now I'm running about 3,200 miles a week.
That's a lot
that I've done. Yeah, it is. So my thing is, you know, I tried to explain to them that, you know, taking from your notes, told them, you know, they should be looking for like a 99 Volvo. You know, I gave them everything basically that you said. They don't want to go that old of a truck. They want to stay around the 2005, 2007 range.
There's the problem that we can't guarantee anything. You're going to end up with another 4 mile per gallon truck that could be in the shop all the time. And then my answer is going to be, so sorry, there's nothing I can do sometimes to help. And that I hate being in that position, and I can't stress it enough that, you know, there are some of those trucks we just can't help. And it's not just fuel mileage. It's big maintenance cost. It's dropping $10,000 and $12,000, not on an engine, just on them trying to figure out what's going wrong with the emissions. And to me, that's just insane. I would try very, very hard to convince them not to buy anything newer than a 2003. And if you can, get them to call me. I'll help them. I'll give them the numbers, and I'll scare the hell out of them, I hope. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Hey, real quick, I want to remind you, we've picked up another new product. Doesn't happen very often. I mean, if you look at our history of the partnerships we've created, it's very seldom ever more than one a year. I look at hundreds and hundreds of products every year, and I don't find many, but boy, am I excited when I do. And it also takes us quite a while before we trust a product in a company enough to actually partner with them officially. And we've done one. We started working with this company, started looking at this company about 2 years ago, started talking to them a little over a year ago, and we pulled the trigger this past month at the Louisville Truck Show. And the company and the product is called Flow Below. It's an aerodynamic improvement for the tractor. So it is a set of fairings, very, very simple, though. Easy installation, very durable. It's a fairing that goes in between the wheels, the two tandems, one that goes behind the rear tandem, and they're matched to, hands down, the best wheel covers on the market. I mean, I have looked at so many wheel covers, and I've wanted to partner with companies, and we've almost pulled the trigger on those, and then I just couldn't do it until I saw these. These are the best designed and manufactured wheel covers I have seen anywhere. They look nice. They are very aerodynamically designed, and you can. There's a YouTube video to show you how to take them off so you can look at your lug nuts and your rim. The video is only 3 seconds long. That's how easy it is. Turn, twist, they come right off. Look behind there. They snap right back on. They stay in place. Very durable. They have pretty extensive fuel mileage testing showing between 5 and 6% improvement. I'm not really ready to put out that number in the real world yet. Testing is the same as the real world, but we do know there is a clear and significant fuel mileage gain. And that's why we partnered with this company, that and a lot of reasons. We are actually handling all of the owner-operator marketing of this product. Marketing, sales, support, everything. Because, and this is pretty unusual and it's pretty telling, the fleets and the OEMs are all over this product. They are so busy with OEM and fleet sales that they wanted to make sure the owner-operator market got taken care of, and they asked us if we would do that. And I was very happy to do that because that is our market. Those are the people we care about. We want to make sure you have access to this product and support, and we're going to do that. So you can find it on our website. The average cost is in the $1,500 to $1,600 range. And it can be installed with one person in 1 hour, very easy installation, and the payback is clearly less than a year. There, the testing shows that it's less than 9 months. As we get more and more numbers in, real-world numbers, I'll continue to report those to you, but we are very, very excited about the product. So either call us or go to the website. You can see it. You can order it if you want right online. Letstruck.com/store. And again, the product is called Flow Below. Let's get back to some phone calls. We're going to head to Tennessee. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Just wanted to find out, I think you mentioned one time before, I'm getting a set of steer tires. Did you say they're good to run them on the drives for a while?
Yeah. And this goes way back to before I was using wide singles. I used to use all position tires in all positions. And that was all I ran. So I had a tire that I loved, which for many years was the XDA1. And then I switched to the XDA3. And I would run that tire on every position on the truck. And the beauty was, if for some reason you got some irregular tire wear, especially on the steers, which I used to get all the time before I, you know, found MD alignment, you could move a tire from the drive position up onto the steers. And I, when I started doing that, and I was really tracking everything, fuel mileage, tire cost, all those things. And I was absolutely shocked at what happened when I would start a tire on the drive axle and then move it to the steer axle. I would get probably 30 to 40% more life out of that tire. It would wear so evenly and it would wear much longer. And, you know, I asked, when I met Mike Beckett, I asked him about that. And he said, yeah, that's very common. He said, what happens with any tire is that even though you don't always see it, the irregular wear many times is set up in the first 10,000 miles of a tire because there's a lot of scrubbing, there's a lot of wiggling. And when you start a tire on the drive axle, you eliminate a lot of that. It's not being turned and it doesn't deal with all the same stuff it does on a steer axle. So you tend to wear the tire in really well and then you increase the life and everything else. So I did that for years and loved it.
Good. And do you put it on the inside or the outside?
I don't know that it ever mattered. I put them, like I said, I had all, you know, I ran single axles back then. So for me, it was six tires, but I had all six tires. They were always just the same.
And for how long would you do that? 5 months to just one set of steer tires, what, 20,000 or feet?
I never worked out the absolute best number, but if I had to guess, I would say that anything over 10,000 miles would probably work really well. For me, it was just a matter of just timing and you know, I never had an absolute method that I used, but I would say anything over 10,000 miles would probably break the tire in nicely.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's, yeah, I kind of miss those days. I love my wide singles. I really do. But all position tires, I loved having them all the way around the truck. They are excellent in wet weather, really good in wet, heavy, slushy snow. They ride nice. They handle nice. They're quiet. And you have that ability to move them around in lots of different positions. Let's go to Columbus. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Oh, what it is, I'm getting ready to build my Big Cam 3400, all right?
Okay.
And I'm going to get in frame kit, the injection pump, the turbo, everything from Pittsburgh Power. But what I was wondering about, I was going to buy, like, the oil cooler and a couple other parts from PAI Industries. I was just wondering, I mean, I've never really used any of their parts. I don't know any of the quality, if they're any good parts or.
You know, I am not familiar with them at all. I don't even recognize the name.
I know they're big into Mack parts. I know I've been told that.
Okay. I would assume that they are. They're not manufacturing these parts, right? They're getting these parts from other manufacturers. You're just buying them through them. Is that correct?
No, they manufacture them, I believe.
They do. Okay. Well, then that does mean we need to know specifically about, you know, their, I thought maybe they were buying from somebody else that we could say, oh yeah, you know, this company makes a great part.
Yeah. They make a Man, I'm not sure. I know they give you a 2-year warranty with the parts. I mean, I was just wondering that way I could save a few bucks instead of going all Cummins parts or.
Yeah. You know, I wish I had a better answer for you. I'm just not familiar with them at all. Yeah. I was going to say you could ask, you know, Pittsburgh Power what they think, but if you're looking at parts that they also carry, obviously, they're going to want you to buy it from them. And I can understand you shop around and Pittsburgh Power doesn't carry everything.
I mean, I'd probably be better off just to buy everything from Pittsburgh Power or go all Cummins, I imagine.
You know, the one thing I'll tell you, if Pittsburgh Power has it, you know, the more you support them throughout this project, the more they'll support you. That's just good relationship building. And if they don't have a part, the one thing I always know about those guys, if they don't carry a part or if they don't have it, they always know who has the best stuff and they'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah, another problem I had before with it is, you know, on that old engine, the antifreeze, I always had the antifreeze leaking around the heads. I guess I probably need to have the block milled or...
Well, let me come back to that. The music's playing. I'm going to get to a break, and I will come right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, right back to the calls. I was talking with Josh in Columbus. Josh, you still with me?
Yeah.
Hey, have you ever spent much time over there at Pittsburgh Power?
Not really. I've called the guys a few times. I mean, I've been pointed in that direction by quite a few of my buddies, and I've heard other guys say all are too expensive.
The reason I ask is when you go over there, if you're going to use them, ask Bruce to show you the T600 that he built to pull his RV years and years ago. It's an old, I think it's an 89 T600. I actually drove it for about a month pulling my show trailer, and it's got a big Cam 400 in it that Bruce built for himself. So you can imagine engine is amazing. It had been a lot of years since I had driven a mechanical anything, and boy, is that thing hot. So he'd love to show it to you, I'm sure, and he will tell you exactly what to watch for when you're building this engine.
All right, I appreciate it, but yeah, I love these old engines. A lot easier
They're
to
fun.
Work on.
You know, I've said many times that I would never run a mechanical engine if my goal was to make money. They are easy to work on, but so are the pre-emission electronic engines. They're pretty simple, and the fuel maintenance cost is light years ahead on the electronic engines. So I'm willing to put up with a little bit of complication in the electronics, but I do love those old engines too for the nostalgia value. I love driving them. I love hearing them. I do like seeing them. They're so simple. But if my goal is to go out and make money every day with a truck, I would never do it with a mechanical engine. For a show truck, for a fun truck, for, you know, even for what I do, pulling the RV around, you know, less than 10,000 miles a year. I usually do somewhere between 8,000 and 10,000 miles a year now. I don't have a mechanical engine, but I could see having one for what I do, because bottom line on me operating this truck isn't a big deal. So have fun with that. But I can't think of anybody better than to help you with a big Cam Cummins than Bruce and Pittsburgh Power. Let's go to Las Vegas. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hello. I've got a question about loads. I haul flatbed construction material, so it's usually slow. But what I've noticed so far this year, my loads are down like 50%, and that doesn't matter whether or not I haul two loads or 10 loads, we're down 50%. And if you go to DAT and look under solutions there, it shows that they're saying that loads appear to be down. I really don't know how to read their chart, so be a little forgiving. It says here, year February 2015 versus 2014. I'm looking at van to truckloads. Looks like it's down 52%. And flatbed loads, flatbed load to truck is down 52%. So that kind of verifies the pain that I'm experiencing. And I'm just wondering if you've heard anything about this, or would be willing to open it up to like a weekend program and ask some questions about this.
Yeah, the answer to all those is yes. I watch the rates and lanes all the time. We are seeing, you know, this winter, January, February was a little slow. Now, the one thing we have to remember on the ratio is that if you don't look at it as a ratio, it can be a little deceiving. And what a ratio means in general is that we're comparing one thing to another. For example, a gear ratio. We use that all the time. Comparing, when we say 355 gears, what we really mean is 355 to 1. And actually, it's 3.55 to 1. We're comparing one side of the gear to the other side of the gear. So if the shaft turns 3.55 times, the other shaft is going to turn once. That's what a ratio is, comparing one number to another. So when we say the load to truck ratio is down 50%, it's actually possible. This isn't what happened, but I just want to point out how deceiving a ratio can be if you're not careful. It would be possible for the load to truck ratio to be down 50%, but there actually could have been more loads. Well, how could that happen? If we're down 50%, how could there be more loads? Well, there could be 100% more trucks all of a sudden. So we could have more loads and the ratio could actually go down because we got even more trucks somehow came into the market. Now, I want to be clear. That's not what happened. I'm only trying to point out that we have to know how to read ratios. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, and this doesn't mention ratios. I would leave that kind of ciphering up to you. But what it does say is industrial trends year over year. So,
yeah, but I'm pretty sure when you read it to me, you said load to truck ratio.
Oh, no, it says van load to truck. And then
yes.
It says flatbed load to truck. It doesn't say that, ratio, but
that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Load to truck. We're comparing two numbers. We're not just looking at loads. We're looking at the loads compared to the number of trucks. That's a ratio. And normally in their documentation, it says load to truck ratio. And I just want people to understand that is, we have to pay attention to both sides of the equation if we want to really know what's going on. Now, we can even look further, which is what I recommend, to different areas and different lanes. There are times when the load-to-truck ratio in one city is absolutely horrible. The city's just loaded with trucks and has very little freight. But then we might go 300 miles away, and it's the opposite. There's all kinds of freight, and there's no trucks. That's why we use a ratio. It allows us to look quickly at one number and know what it is we're looking at. But this is also why I recommend that people start doing this kind of reading and understanding every day. Because when you need to know this stuff, it's not something you learn overnight. It's not something you learn in a year. I've been doing this for a very, very long time, and I still learn about this kind of stuff. Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever listened to the podcast that Rico does called Rates and Lanes?
Well, I tried to, but when I tried to connect to it, it didn't go through. So there's been some technical difficulties, and I can understand that. But
well,
yeah.
I don't Every now and then we might have some phone issues, or he might. One of the things that I'm very happy about is that many of our new podcast hosts are still full time on the road. You know, these are guys out there doing it every day. This isn't somebody sitting at home. So we do run into. I know some days I'm checking in on the podcast, and Rico is saying, we're going to be 10 minutes late. I'm still sitting at the dock getting unloaded, but that's credibility. These guys are out there doing this every day. So try again. I've said for years, I wanted to do this podcast idea 5 years ago or more. And I've often said, we can handle the technology on our end. It's on the user's end that it's not as user friendly as I would like it to be yet. And we're getting closer all the time. When we finish our app sometime this year, that should be a big forward. But Rico does a great job of covering this kind of stuff. Plus the other shows, Kenny Long does Trucking with Authority, and he can answer some questions like this. But Rico really, really stays on top of rates and lanes.
And I don't know how much to expect from him. I mean, he may or may not know the whole country. I don't know if he knows my particular area. How do I approach that?
I'll tell you what he'll do, because he is so tied into the DAT system and he knows it so well. I'm going to throw a number out, and I might be wrong on this, but you could ask him. You can get on DAT's load board system for as little as like $30 or $40 a month, I think. At the bottom end, I think the product, they call it Trucker's Edge. I believe Rico pays upwards of $500 a month for his access to their system. So he has access deep inside. He's got some great tools that he has access to, and he's good at using them. So if you call him and say, hey, here's the area that I run, I think he can do the research on the spot. But if not, I think he'd spend some time and help you figure it out. That is what we want that show to grow and become, is a resource for those kind of things. And Rico's doing a great job with it. I'm all out of time. I will have to see you back here next time. Thanks for joining me. I really do appreciate it. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.